KCRW sponsors include Searchlight Pictures, presenting the new movie, The Greatest Hits. Music takes us places. What if it could literally take you back in time? The Greatest Hits is a hypnotic journey through the connection between love, music, and memory. Now streaming on Hulu.
From KCRW in Santa Monica, this is The Treatment.
I'm Elvis Mitchell. It's The Treatment, which you can also hear at KCRW.com. My guest, writer-director Hilary Brower, made quite a sensation with her second film, Stephanie Daly, which won the Waldo Salt Screenwriting Award at Sundance. Her first film is also an interesting science fiction kind of film called Sticky Fingers of Time. Hilary, thanks so much for being here.
Thank you.
I've got to ask you, because it's a really kind of amazing and tricky story, to explain what Stephanie Daly is about.
Stephanie Daly is the story of two troubled pregnancies. One, a 16-year-old girl who has been accused of concealing her pregnancy and killing her baby. And we're seeing her story in flashback. And the other woman is a forensic psychologist played by Tilda Swinton, who is talking to the girl and dealing with some stuff going on in her own life that sort of mirrors what Stephanie's going through.
And I guess it's mirroring some stuff for you, too, as you were pregnant, as you were making the film, right?
Well, I mean, happily, no. I wrote the film before I got pregnant. Got pregnant with twins, had the twins, and then miraculously the production came together. Now, the film is really about fear. And when I say happily, it doesn't mirror my experience. I think I got a lot of my anxieties out of the way writing the film. And my own pregnancy, yes, it had its moments, but it was a pretty easy ride. I do feel there's some connection between the twins and the movie, but actually a very positive one. You know, it's the movie's dark at time, but it's actually, you know, it's about getting ready to have kids and getting through the shadow stuff.
It's weird because it strikes me as being, in emotional terms, this is a sort of cross between David Lynch and Nicholas Rogue. There's a fractured narrative here that basically, as the story information is played out, we get more of a sense of what the characters are experiencing in emotional terms that reminds me very much of Rogue.
Oh, that's interesting. Well, you know, it's I like to play with time. I like to cut things up. And I also think, you know, the real challenge of this story was getting Stephanie, Amber Tamblyn's story, and Liddy, Tilda Swinton's story, to work together in a way that they weren't redundant and in a way that they perpetuated each other's momentum. Because both their stories are very internal and very much, you know, kind of building tension. It was a big challenge, but ultimately I don't think that either of their stories could have existed without the other. And when you get that kind of essentialness, then the fractured time thing kind of feels like, okay, it works.
But that's a big component in your first film too, isn't it? Sort of fracturing time as a narrative for Sticky Fingers of Time, right?
I guess so, yeah. I mean, Sticky Fingers of Time was like perhaps most explicitly about that. And Stephanie Daly actually really, really takes on its characters. Now, Sticky did too. I think that something I'm always trying to do in all my scripts is trying to get the audience to really engage and bring themselves to what's going on in screen, to really have to use their mind. So even a very subtle drama like Stephanie Daly, where it's a very simple mystery, it's not a complex riddle, it's a simple one. The fracturing of time lets you really look at things from different sides, and I hope helps us really bring ourselves to the process of figuring out this mystery.
It's The Treatment. My guest is writer-director Hilary Brower. Her second film, which was a sensation at Sundance, is Stephanie Daly. I think, though, the way that you – it's very seductive the way you've sort of fractured time in Stephanie Daly, though, because it makes us think we're getting one thing and, in fact, we're getting something else.
You know, there's something that happens when you bring up a little bit of the past and you put it next to a little bit of the present, a little bit of the future. It gives you a sort of objectivity on those moments that you wouldn't have when you're living it in real time. You know, context is everything. Case in point, Stephanie's story, you know, you look at this girl who a million, there's many little moments along her way where she could have just spoken to someone about, you know, I think something might be going on with my body. You know, maybe I should take a pregnancy test. And she doesn't do it. And, you know, you meet Stephanie at the end of the road after she's been arrested and you think, why didn't you do this? But you've really got to go back and get into that past tense moment to see what's going on in that moment for it to really make sense. And then, of course, it colors what's going on in Liddy's life. So it's about, you know, taking things apart, putting them next to each other so you can see them in a new way.
I guess I was wondering in the writing process if you had written it sort of chronologically or the events sort of following each other in order and then broken it up, or if that was always the way you wanted to structure it.
No, it started out actually in two concrete blocks. And this film went through the Sundance Labs, which are a wonderful thing, you know, the workshops that they have in Utah. And it was there that I was convinced that they need to intercut. My original intention was that it was basically Stephanie's story in real time and then Liddy's story in real time. And we saw their interactions twice, each through each other's perspective. But it didn't really work. They really had to become one story. It took me a long time to get that through my head. I think ultimately having the two chunks was a great way to do the character work. But they needed to work together because, indeed, they are kind of sharing a journey.
They are. And I guess the reason I asked you about your pregnancy, because friends of mine who got pregnant always talked about what their dreams became like once, especially in the second trimester. How different the dreams and how much more vivid and emotionally rich and sometimes frightening the dreams became.
That's really interesting. Well, it's a very intense time. And of course, I wrote this before I had become pregnant with my twins myself. But I was very much affected by a lot of the women around me and what they were going through. And it really struck me that these were, you know, women in their 30s and 40s who I had huge amounts of respect for, considered very, very evolved. And yet suddenly it was like they were teenagers again. They were feeling things very intensely. There was a lot of stuff they weren't sure they should talk about. And yes, their dreams were vivid. They could smell everything. They could smell the ocean from Second Avenue in New York City. You know, it was like it's a pretty heightened time. And because of the taboo, we don't really explore it just as a rite of passage. I'm not trying to make a big commentary on pregnancy itself, but I think it is a sort of neglected rite of passage, and it's very interesting in and of itself. This isn't really a movie about bringing home a baby and adjusting to having a new baby. It's kind of about letting go of who you are before you have your first child, whether you give birth or you adopt them, and letting go of who you were and coming to terms with your role as, you know, the parent of something fragile and unknown and that you feel pretty emotional about.
Well, so it's a real sort of reinvention of self, which I think to some extent Sticky Fingers of Time does that too. I mean, it asks these questions about identity and a sense of self as well.
Yeah, I think so. I mean, I think that's, you know, that's kind of the movies I'm interested in making, movies that are about a rebirth of self. I want to go to a movie and walk out feeling slightly a new person. And so that's the kind of effect I'm trying to achieve with my film. Sticky, it was more about creative awakening. You know, it's basically a story about writer's block and about waking up and being present with your imagination. And Stephanie Daly is basically about, you know, waking up and being able to live with your fear, face the unknowns that come up, whether it's in pregnancy or in a marriage or in just being, you know, a human being in a biological world. How do you deal with those big unknowns and how do you find the strength and the connections to move through fear and move on to the next thing?
It's the treatment. I'm talking to the writer-director of Stephanie Daly. It's the writer-director, Hilary Brower. I guess, though, first of all, you can explain to the audience the kind of complicated plot machinations of Sticky Fingers of Time.
Sticky Fingers of Time was about a young woman writer from the present who finds herself tossed around in time. She discovers she's a time freak, someone who can lift time out of order. And she meets up with a woman who's been tossed into the present from the 50s, a woman writer from the 50s. We learn that the woman writer from the 50s is to be murdered, and they set out to figure out who murdered her. And in the course of it, you know, the young woman basically starts becoming more active. And I don't want to give away the punchline, but you know, it's really about, it really asks the audience to use their every ounce of their imagination to solve the Rubik's Cube and figure out, you know, which one of these time freaks killed this woman and why. And you've got to literally pull moments from way in the future and moments that happened in the past and figure out where that person was and what they were thinking.
But what's interesting about both the movies to me is that there's a real sense of the quotidian in them, that even though there's a lot going on, we get a sense of lives being led on a daily basis. And these movies feel grounded to me. And clearly that's got to be very crucial to you, doesn't it?
I think so. I mean, I am most moved by the breathless moments that happen around something very ordinary, you know, a glance someone makes across a room, you know, a little puddle of dew on a leaf or whatever, the big moments that are around us every day. And I think that when I walk into a movie theater, it's kind of like a meditation. It's going in and preparing to open my heart, my eyes, and really see things. So I'm always looking for ways within stories to create moments that feel quite powerful out of very ordinary ingredients. That's the stuff I'm really interested in.
Well, that thing, because often, or at least in the movies I've seen, the characters somehow get disengaged from what's going on right before their very eyes. And the movies are sometimes kind of a clarion call to do that, to sort of watch what's going on you and not be so consumed by everything else.
Yes. Well, you know, I think what happens to people when they sit down in a movie theater is really interesting and moving. It's almost like they're in church. You know, they suspend their disbelief. They watch, usually without too much judgment. If the script is full of holes, they'll pass lots of judgment. But otherwise, you know, we really open ourselves up when we go to the cinema. And we can face things on the screen that we really can't bring ourselves to face in real life. You know, I think movies sort of serve an important function in terms of, you know, being this arena where we can bring the stuff that, you know, we're not going to naturally bring up. But if you can identify with on screen, you can kind of get it out in the open and then process it and chew it over.
Is that a big motivation for you, getting people sort of to recognize things in their lives by just being a bit more deliberate and contemplative about them as you are in the movies?
Well, I hope so. I mean, you know, what I really want to do is engage people. I don't know why I want that, but I don't think what I have to say is actually quite as interesting as what people bring to the screen. And when I see people getting involved in the film, I feel like I've done my job, because then I've had a dialogue with them. I haven't just put a movie at them. They've made it their own, and that means a lot to me, that kind of hope of an interaction.
Well, because both the movies have kind of a sense of mysteries unfolding, which is a conventional way to sort of get audiences to engage in the movie. But then the movies turn out to be not about the big mysteries that we think they're going to be about, but about much more sort of personal revelations, don't they?
I hope so. That's the hope. In fact, yes, it's true. Usually my movies involve some form of red herring. The genre's a red herring, and you then move into some funny little, you know, subtle drama. But yeah, that's the thing that's the kind of work that really gets me excited, and I enjoy turning around. And it delivers a real surprise. You know, people have seen everything, and it's interesting when I sit down to write, it's not the big flashy stuff that I write that turns out to be the thing that makes the impact on people, but it's often a little bit of, you know, misdirection and drama, and then you sneak in the real essence, which is something, again, very personal, very ordinary, but very specific.
Well, we'll take a break. My guest is the writer-director Stephanie Daly, Hilary Brower. I'm Elvis Mitchell. It's The Treatment.
You're listening to The Treatment with Elvis Mitchell from the studios of KCRW Santa Monica.
Welcome back to The Treatment. I'm Elvis Mitchell. The show can also be heard at KCRW.com. My guest is writer-director Hilary Brower. Her film, Stephanie Daly, was a sensation at Sundance. And I have to say part of it, too, the subject matter. When people heard that it was about a young woman dealing with a pregnancy and the way she deals with it, it kind of caught a lot of people off guard. And I think people actually did think of it before they saw the movie in sensational terms. Did that worry you a little bit?
A little bit. I always knew it was going to be kind of a tricky area to work in because, you know, the movie does start out with a prosecutor talking to a forensic psychologist saying, you know, look, I want you to talk to this girl and figure out if she did this thing or not. But from there, we basically leave the courtroom and we go to the bedrooms of the story. We're really about the gray areas, the parts of the story that the judicial system cannot address. You know, what do you do when it's never going to be quite clear what happened in that bathroom stall because, you know, there were no witnesses other than a 16-year-old in labor scared out of her mind and no cameras and there's, you know, ambiguous evidence. So I'm really interested in this gray area, and that's what makes it attractive and fertile and fascinating for me. But, yeah, how do you present it? How do you sell it and say, well, this is like one of those movies you might see on TV, but it's really not. So in that way, you know, we're really going to depend on just sort of, you know, word of mouth and what critics write about it. But it makes it a worthwhile thing to do for me to take that story and look at it in a different way with a different lens.
Well, because one of the key elements of both the films to me is about the issue of control for women and exercising mm-hmm. some control and also the emotional consequences of that control as well.
I think so. And, you know, it's interesting, but even a lot of men who see this movie, you know, there's the birth scene, which gets talked about a lot. And it's intense. Amber Tamblyn has this kind of great scene. And I've seen a lot of men very, very moved by it. And these are men who don't have children. And what they're relating to is the concealment, the moment of extreme pain. And yet it's in a public place. And, you know, she's in this bathroom stall and there's people right outside and she's trying to be quiet. And I think that's what kind of crosses all the boundaries and gets to people, this idea of like concealing pain. And yes, what do you do when you're no longer in control? It's a big issue, I think, especially for Americans. We're a very individualistic society. You know, we really believe we're in charge of our destiny. And we really believe in the roles we're supposed to play. These characters are both caught with their roles changing in ways they're not quite ready for, and it's a big deal. Also, Tim Hutton, I think, does a really good job bringing the male perspective on that as well. You know, the husband who is just kind of trying to make it work and, you know, has his own feelings, but is not in control of the situation. As, of course, Tilda does a great job of, you know, just a remarkable performance because it's, you know, her work is not, she makes this woman very, very positive, very smart and very, very plausible.
But she wants to be in control, but she gets sort of closer and closer to unraveling this thing and her own sort of yearnings as well. That control dissipates for her too, doesn't it?
Absolutely. I mean, that's sort of the punchline. And this idea that we're not in control often when we think we are, you know, it's pretty fundamental. And how do you build that surprise? How do you get the audience in on it with her where it's like, yes, she's in control. Everything's great. She's healthy. She's doing what she needs to be doing. Or, you know, and then how do you unravel it in a way that's plausible? Because that's how it happens in life. You think you're doing fine and then suddenly something smacks you in the face. And afterwards you look back and say, oh, I should have seen that coming. But you didn't.
But I think what's amazing in this movie, too, is that, you know, you've got a character, a forensic psychologist, who basically, whenever we hear those kinds of title, those job titles, we think this is going to be the person who has all the answers. And ostensibly, she does, or she's going to be able to get to them. But that becomes kind of secondary after a while.
Well, as I was researching various cases of concealed pregnancy, I was really struck with how many of these cases nobody knows what happened and never will because they happen in private. There's not, you know, and the evidence is ambiguous. And what I came to is, okay, what I really want to discover is not exactly what happened, but how did it happen? And I think that's the journey that that Tilda takes Liddy as well as the psychologist. She starts out wanting to know what happens, but then as her own personal stuff kicks in, she really gets caught up in trying to understand the how, the mechanisms. And of course, you know, she has a personal reason for doing so, we find out. But that mirrors, you know, my own journey with material as well in terms of deciding, well, what's important is understanding the mechanisms. I may never get an answer, but such is life. A lot of times we don't get answers. So, you know, but if we can understand the context, then that's a huge leap.
My guest is writer-director Hilary Brower. Her film is Stephanie Daly. It's The Treatment. But that's what fascinated me, too, also about Sticky Fingers with Time, that it seems like it's going to be, as we talked about, this one thing, that the answer is important. But in fact, the answer that we think we would need to know is not the important element of the story at all.
I guess that's my my sort of experience of the world, is that usually the destination we're going for is not half as important as the journey that gets us there. That's kind of, you know, one of the reoccurring jokes of being a human being.
How long did it take to write the Sticky Finger Time script? Because I wonder, because it seems like it's such a sort of intricately worked out piece. It took a long time, or I'm guessing you didn't go through the Sundance Lab for that one, or did you?
No, not for that one. That one actually only took about a year. It only took about a year, which, well, if you think about how long Stephanie Daly took, and of course, you know, life was interjecting its own ideas about things while I was writing Stephanie Daly, and, you know, the twins came along. But you know, that one took a long while. So Sticky took about a year, but it was like in that year we were also trying to find financing. So it was kind of like the writing and the developing were going on at the same time. So that's not so long to write and develop a movie, especially in the indie world where, you know, you can never find the money and you're always kind of being sent back to square one. You know, and then Steph Daly took a lot longer to write. But again, other things were happening. I wasn't just writing it over and over again. And then it got made very quickly. So things these things have had very different rhythms, you know.
Well, what do you think your directing style is like very, I have to say Stephanie Daly is a very confident movie, and I can see the sort of the maturation in terms of handling the material. And I wonder how you sort of arrived at finding a way to direct the movie, because it seems like you're a much more confident director now than you were the first time around.
Well, you know, ironically, the answer is I let go a lot.
Really?
Yeah, I stopped trying to make great movies and just started thinking about trying to have a great time. I mean, I don't mean like having a big party, but I mean having a meaningful process with it. I mean, working well with people, keeping an open heart, and yet at the same time keeping sight of story priorities, just basically doing a good job. And I think when I first started out, I had this idea of the kind of film I thought I should make and who I had to be to make it. And I would get very nervous if I thought I was straying from that. And now I'm much more committed to just the present moment and the experience. And I feel like if you head into a filmmaking experience like that, then you're much more likely to actually get a good product than if you get caught up in the result.
Who did you think you had to be when you were making Sticky Fingers of Time?
I probably thought I had to be all those great European directors I saw when I was a kid, or I still don't know who I think I should be. Now I don't think I should be anybody. Now I just think that if I stay true to my instincts and I work well and I work fairly with people, it's probably going to work out. And now I'm much more reassured by the collective experience of the process. I mean, you know, a huge part of Stephanie Daly is it has incredible actors in it, and I'm not trying to, you know, toss away all my glory when I say that I kind of discovered that a whole lot of it is about casting and letting people do their thing, and yeah, I get to help out every now and then, and I have good ideas, and I get to be kind of in the middle of it, but a whole lot of it is this thing for me of just like of letting go and enjoying the group process. And I think it was group process that really kind of attracted me to the idea of filmmaking versus just writing in itself. And honestly, I get to be alone with a script, you know, for years. So I'm always really happy to get on set these days.
It's The Treatment. My guest is writer-director Hilary Brower. Her second film is Stephanie Daly. One great thing about having Tilda Swinton is she's played so many different kinds of mothers in films. I mean, thinking about The Deep End and other things she's done. And I wondered if that was one of the things you found attractive, that she just is so good at bringing about different kinds of emotional attachments to family.
You know, I didn't think of that consciously. The reason I went after Tilda and was so excited about working with her was I was like, I can't think of anybody else who I more enjoy watching think on screen. I just love watching the wheels move behind her eyelids. It's just beautiful. And I hadn't actually thought about the motherhood thing, although when we met, when we had our meeting, all we did was talk about our kids. She also has fraternal twins. And then I thought, oh, gosh, I've really screwed this meeting up. I didn't talk about the movie. I spent, you know, an hour talking to Tilda about nursing and didn't talk about my script. But it turned out to be the right, you know, it actually did have relevance to the way that we made this film. I mean, you know, it's a very conversational set. Tilda's extremely, you know, nurturing, funny woman. And it was just, you know, it actually did have a lot of relevance to how we put this movie together and made it all work. And I do think that her maternal side is a huge part of this movie. And when I say Tilda's maternal side, it may not be what people think of as a maternal side. She's incredibly empowering and helpful to everyone around her. And also, you know, she has a great history making movies. So she's seen every variation that's ever existed on a set. And she just has a lot of good humor. And, yeah, I kind of feel like that energy was really nice for the film.
Well, that's an intriguing irony, though, because you have her playing the woman who doesn't have a child and you have a young actress, Amber Tamblyn, who was never given birth, playing somebody who is having a child.
Yes. Well, she and Amber got along wonderfully, and they're both just extraordinary women. When I think about, I mean, you know, one, I'm so lucky I got to make this movie with everyone who was involved and touched it. But, I mean, they're just great women. I mean, I learned a lot from them just about being a human from both of them. You know, in terms of the irony on screen, yes, it is interesting, especially for us, you know, if we're over 30. Yeah, we still have a lot to learn from the, you know, the mistakes and the things that kids do right. And that's something I think I believe in my heart, that I like movies and I like books where generations really meet in a meaningful way, where it's not like this is a movie about teenagers and the grown-ups are all stick figures. I'm not so interested in that. I'm really interested in what generations can actually teach each other, because I think that's the human condition. We're meant to actually mix it up a little more than we do culturally now or the way we're represented.
But in both the movies, there's this clash of generations almost. And after that impact, they have to kind of sort of step back and reckon with each other as people.
Well, that's the nature of family life. But the important thing is that they do at least get together, that they clash and that they mix and that they have meaningful relationships, versus a lot of times what I see in movies is the generations really separated. They kind of learn to put up with each other, but the stories are somewhat separated. And I think there is often more of a mixing. I mean, there tends to be, it's true, both films have sort of a mother figure who comes in and gets involved with a 20-something woman and really, you know, in a way that's, it's, you can't just say it's motherly. There's something, you know, there's something deeper than that goes back to like a, you can say mentor or friend or I don't know, whatever. But I'm interested in that idea that we have things to learn from each other. And, of course, the older women are learning, too.
Well, thank you so much for doing the show, Hilary. Thanks again.
Oh, thank you.
My guest today is Hilary Brower. Her film, the amazing film, is Stephanie Daly. Our technical director at KCRW in Santa Monica is Mario Diaz, with assistance from Lashik Wojcik at Carnegie Recording Studios in New York. Bob Carlson is the editor. Gemma Dempsey, the producer. I'm Elvis Mitchell. It's The Treatment.
An audio archive of this and other programs can be found at kcrw.com. For questions and comments about The Treatment, please email us at thetreatment@kcrw.com. The Treatment is produced and distributed by KCRW Santa Monica.
KCRW sponsors include Searchlight Pictures, presenting the new movie, The Greatest Hits. Music takes us places. What if it could literally take you back in time? The Greatest Hits is a hypnotic journey through the connection between love, music, and memory. Now streaming on Hulu.